you know, we're the ones to keep it wicked. Rock and roll, all good, mix it up, that's my ticket. Cruising in my Cadillac Escalade.
Good evening and welcome to episode 41 of the Deck Tees podcast, brought to you by LegitMTG.com. My name is Erin Campbell. It is no secret that I love GatheringMagic.com. I've had about four or five of their writers on my show so far, but the other day I just decided to skip all of the nonsense and go straight to the top. With me is content manager and editor-in-chief Adam Staborski. Hello.
Hi.
Hi. How are you?
I'm doing all right now.
Good. I've heard through the grapevine that you've been itching to do some podcasting lately. Is that true?
I mean, the grapevine being, I said explicitly that on Twitter. I went through a phase where I was on Monday Night Magic pretty regularly, and I'd run up every pre-release. I would go and do like a casual pre-release podcast with Big Head Joe when it was Big Head Joe and Joey Pasco on OMTG Taps, and so. Yeah, I just kind of fell into a funk. Like, I kind of missed that a little bit, so I started talking again.
Awesome. Well, hopefully you can. I was going to say something about getting your itch scratched on my show, but that sounds kind of wrong. But I'm okay with it if you are. So just throwing that out there. So let's go ahead and get started. Now, I did a little bit of research on you, Adam, which I'm prone to do with guests if I'm ever not sure what we should talk about or if I'm ever trying to find some different topics to talk about. And it seems that from what I found, you started off with Gathering Magic back when it was Mana Nation. And from what I could tell, your first article was published in June of 2010. Is that correct?
That sounds about right. Yeah, okay. It was after Grand Prix DC in 2010, and that was in May.
Right. So let's go ahead and walk me through how you went from writing for Gathering Magic back then to where you are right now.
Well, I think, the story starts actually a little bit earlier.
Okay.
I actually wasn't writing for... Mana Nation first. I was actually writing on Daily MTG first.
Right.
And that's how I got onto Mana Nation, because I was writing Series Fun and kind of talking about all the cool things that lots of people find interesting, I guess. Trick sent me out an email and approached me at the Grand Prix and was like, hey, you know, I have this site, you know, I've got writers, you know, is this something that interests you? And I'm like, well, I've never written for two sites at once, but I never thought I'd write for just one site. So, okay. You know, and it was like, what do you want? Like, you know, do you want more casual stuff? You know, you're looking for deck lists. Like, what's the specific goal? And he was like, I want you to write about what you want to write about and just go with it. You know, basically gave me carte blanche to just do whatever I wanted. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did. And that's, you know, that the opportunity, instead of being just, you know, just write about, you know, cool, casual, fun stuff. And to be able to talk about my cube or talk about Magic Online and, you know, the going to events and just having that opportunity to discuss, you know, it was almost kind of like a blog, but much more focused, much more directed. And I really enjoyed that. And so over throughout the rest of the year, that's what I focused on. And towards the very end of the year, Kelly Reed over at one of the guys at Quiet Speculation approached me looking for a writer for when they were getting ready to launch their site at the end of 2010. And I said, you know, hey, I'm already writing two places. I'd really rather not do that. You know, if I did something else, I'd need a bigger opportunity. And he was like, well, you know, we kind of also need somebody to kind of wrangle, you know, all the casual guys, you know, would you do that? So sure. So for about 3 weeks, I was writing three articles a week.
Jesus.
While editing and queuing and coordinating writers for the casual, they had like a dedicated casual side at Quiet Speculation at the time. And so after I finished blowing my brain out, I decided just write two articles and just deal with editing. And so for pretty much for the next, you know, like 11 months, that's what I did. All the way through 2011, I was writing both sites, you know, editing at Quiet Spec. And I was starting to feel a little burned out. You know, I had gone to Worlds and, or I was getting ready to go to Worlds later in the year and going kind of like a last vacation with my wife. You know, she was very pregnant and kind of as a way of changing perspective a little bit. So I'm like, you know what, I kind of need a break. And so I'm gearing down and I send Kelly a message and I'm like, hey, you know, I think I'm going to step down. You know, I just can't maintain this level of effort. You know, I'm a little worried how much time am I going to have. And then like, you know, like the next day, Trick's like, hey, I got a job at Wizards, so I need a new me. Are you that person? You know, to the whole world. So I'm like, well, you know, I guess I'm a glutton for punishment, because that seems like a way more awesome job than just editing at Quiet Speculation. So sure. I'm like, you know, hey, what's involved here? You know, like I have some experience, you know, I have some ideas, you know, I feel like we get along, you know, is this something you think I could do? And, you know, talking to Trick and after, you know, a formal interview, I definitely had to go through and vet, you know, vet what I knew and what I wanted to do and why, they hired me on to contract and run Gathering Magic. Mm-hmm. And so I've been there for a little over a year now.
Mm-hmm. Now, how has Gathering Magic changed since you've taken the reins? Like, what are some things that changed on the site, or what are some things that the site has done that you can say that you personally were responsible for?
Well, it published some really rough articles. Mm-hmm. you know, one of the first things that definitely changed is there were several mistakes, and you know, some of that comes from just the lack of experience. Some of it comes from, you know, bad decisions. You know, mm-hmm. I just didn't have wisdom, you know. Mm-hmm. But the overall goal of the site hasn't really changed. But the things that I brought to it are, you know, I've reintroduced podcasts and brought back some of those for this year. I really kind of ramped up a focus on writing. You know, all the writers that work with the site, generally I try to find writers that have some skills and talents, you know, like every site does. But yeah. I find one of the books that I like to use, it's like 50 Writing Tips. It's a book available on Amazon. It's like $6 or $8, but I recommend it to all the writers. I constantly encourage them to think about how they're saying things, why they're saying it, to build a better story. And I'm not always good about giving feedback all the time, because I'm a little tight on time usually, but mm-hmm. as you might imagine. But the writers that I work with, I'm very pleased to say that they work hard and they improve and they grow and they change. And I think that's what I've really helped try to bring to the mm-hmm. site over the past year, is just a good set of writers that have all grown. And I think it shows when Mike Cannon, Bruce Richard, they got called up to Daily MTG. Mm-hmm. Brendan Weiscotten, he went on to become a full-time writer, a creative writer, a technical writer at Fantasy Flight Games. You know, that guys like this, you know, that they have talent, they have skills, they grow and demonstrate them. And that's kind of what I've really tried to bring.
Mm-hmm. I have to say, though, personally, I do feel like you give very good feedback, because I did submit to you an article and the article happened to not make the cut, which I am very okay with. And it's funny, because even after the fact, you had checked in with me and you were like, are you okay with the feedback? Did I miss anything? Could I have said anything better? And I'm like, nope, it was good. You know, like I had nothing against it. It was concise. It was constructive. And I think you handled that really well. And I've heard things from people who write for you. Like I had Natasha on my show a couple episodes ago, and I've been friends with her for a while. And one of the things I was really worried about when I first started reading her work is that, you know, her work does seem like it is better suited for a certain audience. So like not everybody would get her work, because it is very intelligent and it does deal, it is written in such a way where I can see certain people not getting into it. And one of the things I was concerned about, and I asked her on my show, is, you know, has anyone ever said to you, not like dumbing it down, but has anybody ever asked her, you know, is anybody going to get what you're saying? Have they ever asked her to simplify it or anything? And one thing she was really pleased about was the freedom that you give her and that you give all your writers. And she was just very happy to say that she's never felt limited, or like she couldn't talk about something, or she couldn't word it the way she wanted to. And she was very happy to be writing for you because of that. And that sounds like a dream. Because I've written for people before where it's, no, or that sentence, or where are you going with this? Why are you trying to do this? And I can't imagine writing for somebody and not having that freedom. That's something I would need to have. So,
yeah, it's you know, Magic's a smart game, and I think that a lot of players that play it are smart. Mm-hmm. You know, and I don't mean that as in, you know, that people that don't play Magic are dumb, but just, yeah, you know, I think that when you talk to an audience of an intellectually stimulating game, they enjoy other intellectual stimulation. You know, mm-hmm. I think there's a huge overlap with board games and strategy games and just the whole idea of EV and gaming systems. That's what, I mean, you know, that's a Magic player trope. Mm-hmm. You know, how can they game this to make it better? So, you know, having somebody who's willing to not only, you know, talk to them in an intelligent way and treat them just as respect as a reader, saying, hey, I'm going to use words and they're big and you're going to get them, mm-hmm. but also to do the research and lay out exactly, what the conclusions are and why they are that way and what supports them. You know, I think is a really awesome type of content. And, you know, it's been a pleasure working with Natasha so far. You know, it's always exciting. You know, I have no idea what she's working on month to month, mm-hmm. and I get one article and it's just awesome, you know, mm-hmm. and that's great.
Now, something else I asked her when she was on my show is why she feels that other sites aren't providing that kind of content. And again, that's not to say that other sites are providing simpler content or dumber content or anything, but you're really not seeing anybody write the way that she does or at the level that she does or wrapping up the articles the way that she does. And I tried to figure out why that might be. Coming from your point of view, where you are an editor-in-chief and you are a content manager, can you think of a reason why other sites may not be willing to take on her kind of work or why we're not seeing more of that?
I mean, I don't think it's not a willingness. I know that I want to say a couple months ago, maybe sooner than that, there was a long form article done. I mean, almost identical to Natasha's form of research base with a works cited and, you know, introduction, you know, data conclusion, just, mm-hmm. you know, almost like a carbon copy, you know, and that was on Star City Games, and I was excited to see it. I'm like, great, you know, maybe there'll be more of this type of stuff. You know, I'm a big fan of sites like The Verge, The Atlantic. You know, I think that there's a lot of opportunity for intelligent, long-form research articles. And, you know, I think what holds them back is there are a lot of different ways to run content sites. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways is to focus exclusively on, you know, kind of if your website is a storefront, right, and you want to sell stuff, you need to get content on there that gets people to look at it and click through to buy some stuff.
Right.
And so if you base your metrics, you know, really around optimizing people coming to the site regularly, clicking through and purchasing your product, you know, a long form research article that's really engaging and interesting and people will talk about, but doesn't, you know, generate a lot of click-throughs or generate a lot of sales directly. It's much more difficult to justify that as kind of an ongoing vein of content. You know, it's a similar problem that, you know, a lot of podcasts face. You know, like when I look at things, you know, like I notice podcasts are definitely a different form of content because they look and perform way differently from, you know, like these other set of articles that I look at. Mm-hmm. But I know that people talk about them and engage them in a different way. And having those different types and levels of engagement, I think, is really important. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, that one of the things I think makes Gathering Magic unique is because we have this focus on, or at least I tried to bring a focus on, you know, content first. You know, what is interesting? What does the writer want to talk about? And what does the writer find most interesting? I think that speaks to an audience really, really clearly, really cleverly. I think people enjoy it better. You know, that seems to be the feedback I get is when somebody's really passionate, you know, their articles are more enjoyable. Surprise. So, mm-hmm. you know, tapping into Natasha's passions, you know, it's not going to generate a whole bunch of click-throughs and nobody's going to read her article and suddenly buy a case of, you know, Dragon's Maze. But I think the association that, you know, that hey, this is a really cool, intelligent person. I feel like I'm learning something here. I feel this is like, you know, I never thought of it that way. I think that experience, you know, just like games need to be fun and they create that experience, I think content can do the same thing. And I'd like to create that experience. So.
Mm-hmm. It kind of reminds me of something I talked about when I had John Medina on my show, and I'm not trying to name drop for anybody listening. So, but we did, we did talk about the concept of sort of what comes first, the chicken or the egg. You know, you have a lot of blogs that happen to be associated with stores. You know, your site's associated with Cool Stuff Inc. and, you know, Star City's obviously associated with their store, Channel Fireball, and things like that. But, you know, you can sometimes, it's very easy to tell a store that happens to have a blog attached or a blog that happens to have a store attached. And I feel like, you know, intelligent long-form works like Natasha writes really helps you distinguish your blog as a blog that happens to have a store attached. And I think that kind of sets things apart. And I think that's part of the reason maybe why I enjoy Gathering Magic a little bit more is because I do feel like you're in it for the writing and not necessarily, like you said, just for the sales and the singles and the advertising and things like that. So.
Yeah, and it's all important too. You know, I mean, one of the things that I brought to the site since Trick left is I actually added a, particularly through this past Dragon's Maid season, I actually added just a little ad at the foot of the article because that was kind of the only place where, especially when you read down through, you know, there's nothing left on kind of either column on the sides of the content. So I just had one last little place where, if somebody did happen to read through and decide, wow, this, you know, this intelligent dialogue about, you know, what it really means to learn and lose in magic really makes me want to buy a whole bunch of magic to do that. You know, it is right there, but, the way I feel it's a really important balance. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that one of the biggest issues with, say, for example, Star City's old layout, you know, it was a very, very legacy, you know, it was an old legacy layout. It was a different, content management system. I would believe, you know, just based on how radical the new design looks, but you know, it kind of felt like it was just a Craigslist, just ways too much stuff to click on, mm-hmm. all on the front. And I think that clearing that away, you know, they still have a lot of places to click and they advertise a lot of things, but it's done cleaner and it doesn't quite feel so like it's just all kind of like crammed in there.
Right.
You know, and I think that also helps. That visual design definitely plays a big role in how you interpret and experience, you know, the same content.
Mm-hmm. Now, in your first article from June 2010 at Madination, you were very clear about the fact that you identify as a casual player, and you also went far enough to define what your version of casual is, because that's a pretty open-ended term, and even when I played World of Warcraft, you know, the word casual would mean different things to different people. Can you say that as of this recording, you still identify as a casual player, and do you feel, and if you do, do you feel that being casual still means what it meant to you back then in that first article?
Yeah, I mean, you know, looking back at that, you know, that first article on Madination, it's clear that the way I go about writing and explaining things has evolved over the past few years. But you know, really, what I was trying to say is that the idea of casual is that you play Magic to have this experience, mm-hmm. to have this this kind of this pleasurable game, you know, and what really makes something casual is just that's your focus. Mm-hmm. You know, your only takeaway is going to be this fun experience. You know, competitive Magic layers in this idea of, you know, of competing, of ranking and defeating opponents, and you can be having a miserable time but being very successful competitively, mm-hmm. and certainly vice versa. And so that's, you know, that's really the distinction I tried to make, was that when I sit down to play Magic, you know, generally I'm just looking to have a good time, mm-hmm. and there are plenty of games where I lose, but it was awesome and it was really great. And the only times I found, and from talking with other players, that this seems to be a similar experience, is when I put value onto the game. When I say I need to win, suddenly that my ability to feel like I'm having a good time, you know, really shrinks. You know, I really usually, you know, it almost becomes predicated on winning. Like, if I do not win, I am therefore not having fun. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really the distinction, is because I'm not putting this requirement, this heavy requirement that I need to win. I still want to. I'm still going to play to try to win. But I'm that's not a requirement for me to have this positive experience. And that's really, that hasn't changed. You know, I still, when I sit down to play, whether it's, you know, like Eric Klug's Common Uncommon Cube, you know, I love that. I get a little competitive, but generally the games are just awesome. Like, even when I'm losing, like, it's just, I got to do something great. You know, mm-hmm. about the only time I have a miserable experience playing Magic is when I just don't. And that is, I just, you know, I get mana flooded or mana screwed. And despite, you know, kind of my best intentions and my willingness to go along, I just don't get to engage in the game because, you know, I get run over.
And I think that's actually a really good way to put that, Adam, because that was some frustration that I've been facing lately, where I started playing Jund. I started playing what's called a Tier 1 deck, and I decided that I wanted to do some more events. And I was at SCG Seattle 2 weeks ago or so, and the last two rounds of the SCG Open, I lost due to what you just described. There was one round where I was mana flooded, and then there was one round where I didn't have the correct mana that I needed to survive the onslaught. And I had a really hard time, you know, kind of trying to define what I was feeling. So I was very upset and I was sort of tilting. And I wasn't tilting because I lost. I was tilting more from a feeling of helplessness. And that's one way that you can word it. But you also brought up the another good way to word it of you're not able to engage. And that's frustrating too, because, you know, when you have too much mana and nothing to spend it on, you're not affecting the board. You're not contributing in any way. And at the same time, if you don't have the right mana, you've got this handful of really great things and you're still not able to produce. And I think that's another way that I can sort of spin what I'm feeling is I'm angry because I'm not able to engage. And you worded that quite well, and I may have to use that.
Yeah, and some of the credit for that goes to, you know, I'm trying to remember if it was Aaron Forsyth or might have been Tom LaPilli. It was one of the guys on Latest Developments. He talked about the difference between Counterspell and Doomblade. Mm-hmm. If you cast a creature and I counterspell it on the spot, or you cast a creature and as soon as I priority again, I Doomblade it, you know, the exact same net effect happens. Mm-hmm. But the oftentimes the experience is very different. You know, you don't feel like you succeeded in doing anything if your spell is just countered. Like,
right.
It didn't even matter. It didn't matter whether it was a creature or anything else. Just whatever you did was not allowed. Versus I resolve my creature, you know, I say, okay, go. And it's like, well, at the end of your end step, I'm just going to kill that guy. You know, it's still disappointing, but it's a different type of disappointment. You know, I think that, you know, generally, you know, I know my experience has been like that. You know, that the feeling of a counterspell versus a removal spell doing the same thing just feels totally different by the way, just by the function of how it happens, mm-hmm. you know, and I think it's really easy to kind of get carried away in focusing on the one. And I think that's why kind of counterspell has been villainized so much. I mean, other than just doing anything you want it to do, but you know, why players that love to go big still love to play, you know, Damnation and all these big counterspells and stuff, but it feels different when you're affecting something on the battlefield than when you're just stopping somebody from casting.
So I have to ask you, Adam, which one feels worse to you, having your spell countered or having your creature doomladed?
Usually countered.
Yeah? Yeah. I can understand that.
Yeah, one of the early articles I wrote on Daily MTG was that, you know, I really went through a long period where I just hated blue. I mean, it was just like, man, I wish this color would just go away. You know, and a lot of it had to do with just I started loving blue, and it, you know, kind of like almost like scaring some friends off of playing Magic. Mm-hmm. You know, using like number crunch and some really just unfair recursive stuff to just understand that, you know, how the experience that I'm getting in the game, it's not just shared. It's mutually dependent. Mm-hmm. You know, I might be having a great time, but if I'm not cognizant of the experience that's creating for people that I want to play with all the time, you know, and that's kind of the core casual conundrum is if you make the game unpleasant for other people, mm-hmm. in your local casual group, they're not going to come back and play with you. So it took me doing that to have them say they don't really want to play Magic anymore for me to realize maybe I'm, you know, maybe there's something I'm doing that I need to think about differently. Mm-hmm. And the context of where to do these really powerful things that obstruct opponents and lock them out of the game, that may not be the same place where I want to hang out with guys and eat pizza and Cheetos.
Mm-hmm. Now, does you identifying as a casual player affect sort of the direction that Gathering Magic goes in? Because I remember when I came back to the game, I came back in January of 2012, I want to say, which is right around the time Innistrad Block was coming out. And one of the things that really attracted me to Gathering Magic and kept me coming back was the fact that it felt very approachable to me as a returning player. Everything felt very digestible. I wasn't intimidated by a lot of the content. I didn't feel that a lot of the posts were waving around what we call EPing. I didn't feel you know what that is. You know,
I played WoW. I'm
okay,
familiar.
Okay, you're down. I approve. But you know, I just felt like, you know, that wasn't the goal of the site, and I felt like your decks were there to sort of help me be good. But you know, there wasn't a lot of your decks weren't budget breaking. They weren't decks that I didn't feel I couldn't pick up as a new player. And that's actually what has led me to recommend Gathering Magic to other people. Because when I stopped playing WoW, I still had a lot of WoW people follow me because I was a WoW blogger, And I would tweet about magic so much that people were getting back into it, or people were willing to try it. And being that they read my blog and that they just read blogs in general, the next thing they would say is, Aaron, where can we read about this? And the first thing I would say is Gathering Magic, because I knew that they'd be able to understand what was being thrown at them. Has that been a conscious effort on your part, or has that just sort of been how everything is shaken down?
It's been a conscious effort, but it's also a function of kind of the marketplace for writers. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you really want to learn about, you know, the kind of the intricate details of strategy at the top levels of the game, you know, that's going to come from, you know, the elite players in the game. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that makes sense. You know, the guy who you can find at F&M is, you know, generally you're not going to perceive as providing the same quality of true depth of magic understanding as somebody who can win multiple pro tours. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not a comparison, you know? So when I'm looking at trying to find content and writers and grow Gathering Magic, I could go and chase down some of the best writers in the game and get them to write on Gathering Magic and provide that, really elite, intricate, highly detailed type of strategy content. But, you know, there's only so much incremental value. Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm going to provide the exact same content as three other major websites, you know, not only does it not differentiate what Gathering Magic does, but it also makes it really redundant. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's, you know, being both forgettable and the same, you know, it just seems like, it seemed to me like now not necessarily the best approach. Mm-hmm. You know, I know that there are tons of players that read lots of stuff and really want to see different and interesting things, or are willing to see someone kind of evolve or make mistakes or walk through them. And so those are the things that I like to kind of point the Gathering Magic writers at, is that, you know, your audience isn't other professional players at the, you know, that have platinum status on the pro tour. But, you know, kind of the people like, you know, like you and I, that if we're going to go to F&M or if we're going to go to a PTQ, you know, we're going to read a lot of different stuff. And we're going to try to find what we can understand and actually work with. You know, it doesn't, you know, good players know that they can't play with something they don't understand. Mm-hmm. And so really making that content approachable and friendly and inviting and, you know, honest, you know, not saying that, you know, not saying things like this is the absolute best card, end dot, mm-hmm. you know. Like things like, you know, those really extreme absolutes can really be alienating too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand completely. Now, you had mentioned before you were writing for Mana Nation, you were writing for Daily MTG, and to my knowledge, you still write for them. I admit yep. that you do write some Commander stuff, and I'm just now getting into Commander, so I admit that I have not read a lot of your Daily MTG stuff, not because I don't like you, not because of anything personal, but Commander is just not my thing right now, but I may start. So tell me how you got your start writing for Daily MTG, because that's sort of a big deal.
Well, that requires going back a little further.
Take me back there, Adam.
So it was, you know, I think my first article went up in November of 2009.
Jesus.
And before that, I had written a couple, articles on MTG Salvation. I had actually been out of Magic for a while, and I was kind of running around Azeroth, and it was awesome. I loved it. And when I moved to DC. You know, I came down for my wife and I got an office job, and suddenly the hours my college buddies were holding to kind of get together and do the thing. This was during the Burning Crusade. So, you know, it wasn't like the kind of the open access and accessibility that WoW is kind of done today. But the, you know, the big thing was I just couldn't play with them mm-hmm. all the time anymore. And I didn't see them. And I, you know, these are the people that I talked to all the time, and I was really missing that social contact. And earlier in college, I'd been a big Magic player. I was organizing, you know, kind of like casual Magic events. You know, I'd buy like a booster box and make it basically, you know, as cheap as possible, so everybody could come and do what they wanted to do in a draft. So I decided to look up what the local store was, mm-hmm. and I found a store that was basically 10 minutes away in traffic, which is awesome for the DC metro area. And when I went there, I found out it was basically the biggest store, mm-hmm. Which came with some issues, but they had a big, huge kind of a casual, just play whatever Thursday crowd, you know, and that was often bigger than Friday Night Magic. You know, like 40 people would come to the store, on Thursday night. And that's how I got into it. And so, I visited MTG Salvation, started to get back into the community a little bit, you know, and, I decided, you know, what the heck, you know, I think I want to write. And so I did that for Indigy Salvation. And it was through there that, through those early awkward posts that, Kelly, the then editor for Daily MTG contacted me and was like, hey, we have an opening. Would you mind submitting? And that's kind of how it took off from there.
Mm-hmm. So what is it like being just a writer for a website when you're also the content manager, editor in chief for another site? Are there ever times where, administrative decisions come down and you're like, if I was the editor in chief, I wouldn't do that. Or I'm glad I'm just a writer. I just work here. Are there moments like that at all?
Not really. Fortunately, I found Kelly and I continue to find Trick very agreeable and reasonable. And, and a lot of times, what in a vacuum can look like kind of like a painful change, it's actually almost the reverse because I help manage the flow of content at another website. I kind of understand, why that change would be awesome and what the upsides are. And I'm like, well, it's painful for me, but actually I see why it's total upside for you guys. And I like you enough that that's great. Like I'm totally on board with this, even though it's a little different or a little more work for me. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Are there times where you miss just being a writer and not having to worry about some of the more back end things, maybe more the administrative things, and it really is just about you writing? I mean, is there ever a time where you wish you could go back to those days?
When I'm really stressed out, when things aren't working right, or one of the things I find myself doing is every writer has different habits and approaches and techniques. And the one thing that I found is I'll have an idea and I'll start writing it through and I'll get halfway or even most of the way through the article and I'll realize that this is not working. This is wrong. And so I'll just literally scrap the whole thing, start with a new idea, sketch it out a little bit and then start writing again. And, there are times when just, all these things stack up and I need to finish this deadline and I've got these things that I want to finish up. And, I've full-time day job and these other responsibilities that I'm really trying to meet as well. And I think, it'd be nice if I just had this extra time, but I realized, that one of the things I noticed is when I took on more work and responsibility, I got better about managing my time. Mm-hmm. And I feel like even though it'd be great to have more time to work on the things I want to work on, I don't feel like I would necessarily handle them in the same way, knowing that I have more time to work on them anyway. So, I think that, I definitely enjoy what I'm doing, and at some point, it'll change. But right now, I actually really enjoy the challenge and the stress of kind of keeping it all up.
Mm-hmm. Now, a couple of months ago, I kind of want to get your editor-in-chief opinion on something. Somebody had made a post on Google+, which I had linked to you in the show notes, and they basically said that this person felt that there needed to be more female representation in terms of writers on Daily MTG and possibly even other magic websites as well. And Trick Jarrett was nice enough to reply to this post and indicated that it's not as simple as just saying, we want more women, come women, and then they come and write for you and things like that. And I actually brought this topic up on another show of mine that I had some lovely ladies on, and we talked about this too. From your point of view as an editor in chief, and it seems like Gathering Magic does a good job of representing everybody, especially female writers. You had Melissa writing for you for a long time, Melissa DeTora. Currently, you have MJ, Natasha, Rada, or Rada? Is it Rada? Rada?
Rada.
Rada, sorry. Think I said it wrong once before. Don't mean any offense by that. She's also written posts occasionally for you guys, and it seems like you do go out of your way to make sure that everybody is spoken for and represented on the site, which is great. What are your thoughts on that? When people say there aren't enough women writing, people need to cater to them and get them on board. From an editor-in-chief standpoint, what do you think about that?
From an editor standpoint, what I'm most interested in is the best content that I can find, mm-hmm. that I can have. And it's not about owning it. It's about getting it there so it can be shared. Mm-hmm. Somebody who can write is only as good as the audience they can reach. Mm-hmm. It's kind of the editor side of looking at it. And so, to Trick's point, it's not as simple as just, well, now we need, Adam, it was nice knowing you, but we really need a woman to do this instead. Mm-hmm. I think that type of light switch thought, you know, obviously it doesn't work and it's very problematic. And the Post kind of discussed that a little bit, that obviously that doesn't make sense as a solution. But what's really challenging is if you want to go get, you know, a female writer, you know, I think that that's kind of the wrong way to go about it. What I want to find are great writers and people that are really passionate about what they do and really excited to share what they're thinking about and have a great way of expressing that in a way that people can relate to and understand. And, you know, for me, you know, the kind of the last thing I look at is who is this person? What is their gender? You know, it's not even on my mind.
Right.
It's there and it's present. And obviously it's part of the reflection, but ultimately, you know, it's not that it shouldn't matter whether it's male or female, but that naturally there should be enough people passionate and willing to share these things that there is more representation and it gets better. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that if you look back at magic sites, you know, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, you know, you don't see this type of, you know, if you want to call it representation, but I think it's just a matter of how the community has evolved and that there are more places to have voices heard. There are more opportunities to kind of put your foot out, you know, poke your foot in the water and say, you know, this is something I'm passionate and want to share about. And there's definitely a big dialogue on, you know, places like Twitter and Google+ and Facebook and all this networking that it's much easier for somebody who wants to put themselves out there to make those connections. And I think that's why we're just seeing it now. It's that not necessarily that there weren't, you know, there wasn't the same interest before or editors were trying to hide or ignoring, you know, kind of female players, but it's just, I think now we can see them easier. Mm-hmm. It's easier to find them and to read the things that every player wants to share. And, you know, it would be great if I could have, you know, more people that are really passionate and good at sharing those things, you know, regardless of who they are, step up to do that.
I think it also comes down to a different sort of representation. You know, I think it's less about sites not willing to have women writers or not wanting to, and more of the fact that there still aren't that many women who play Magic. And one thing that's always bothered me is, you know, we see people like Jackie, we see people like Melissa, we see people like Mary Jacobson, we see people like Carrie Oliver, and it leads people to think that there are more of us out there than there really are. And don't get me wrong, we've come a very long way. I actually belong to a Facebook group called Ladies of MTG, and we have over 200 members, which is awesome. And when I go to, you know, SCG Opens, I went to the one in Seattle, like I said, and I found 15 women. So out of 530 some people, there were 15 of us. So that's big. But, you know, I do still feel like there's this misconception that we really are everywhere, that things have changed that much. And this is still very much a man's game. And I don't think it's that these websites are purposely not having female writers on board. It's just that the number of female players playing is still small. Then you break that down into the number of female players who want to write about their experiences, and I feel like that's an even smaller number, you know, and I just think it's more of an issue of how many people are really doing it. And, you know, it's I don't think it's something the site should necessarily be attacked for. I think it's just a matter of, you know, how many of us there really are. And then to break it down even further, how many of them are writing content that meets the standards for those sites, and how many of them have the level, you know, have the writing skill to be writing for a major website. That's an even smaller group, and it just keeps getting smaller and smaller from there. And that's really what I think it is. And it was strange to me to read that post, and, you know, maybe I took the post the wrong way, but I didn't feel it proved its point well. So.
Yeah. I mean, you know, coming from a mathematics background, you know, I'm an analyst by the day, I have a degree in math, you know, that it's very easy, you know, that I totally see that argument that, you know, when you just look at proportional representation and you start running the numbers on it, you know, it looks really bleak. Mm-hmm. You know, it looks terrible. But I think that the point is that, you know, something I really took home from the post is that, you know, the real, you know, one of the things I try to do with criticism is, what is the grain of truth here? Mm-hmm. If somebody genuinely wants to improve something, it means that there's a truth in there. And whether I agree with exactly how they would go about changing it, doesn't change that there's something there that I can take away and think about. And, you know, to me, it's less of a point that statistically it's going to be really, really, you know, it's rarer, if you want to put it, to find, you know, somebody like you than somebody like me, but it doesn't change the fact that you're still out there. Mm-hmm. And it's my job to help find those types of voices and help make sure that, that it's not proportional representation, but that your voice is still really important, mm-hmm. and you do what you do really well. And I think that shows why you've moved up, and you know, now you're featured on a content website, and people, you know, are excited to be on your podcast,
which is pretty frightening.
And the thing is it's not that you intrinsically are this unique and special and different person, but it's just that you are what you do, mm-hmm. and somebody didn't see that earlier. You know, and now that they've seen it, you know, they've taken advantage to help share that wider.
Yeah.
You know, and that's really the goal of the editor, is to say, is there somebody out there? You know, is there somebody that I haven't seen yet, or that I'm missing, or that that hasn't had a chance to reach my voice yet? Because just statistically, any writer is going to have a hard time getting their voice out there.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the flip side, is that, you know, it is really challenging, you know, guys like Trick and me and others to say, you know, where are these voices, and am I just missing them?
Mm-hmm. You also brought up a really good point about quality, which was something that came up on that show with the three girls and I, and it was, you know, you want to have a female writer who's good. You don't want to have somebody who's just sort of a figurehead or a placeholder, where, you know, you take on this female writer, and she may not be very good, but you're taking her on because she's a woman. It's like, here's our girl writer right here. She can't write worth a damn, but she's here. We have a female writer. Go look at her. And people are going to be like, you know, people are going to see the subterfuge there. They're going to be like, okay, so you're doing it just to sort of, you know, attract us and just to sort of keep us quiet. Like, woo, you got your female writer now. And I think, like, you're right. It is more important to have people who are good writers first, and then who happen to be women, rather than just trying to fill that void and trying to make a show of it as you do. And I think it would be more insulting if a site did that. And I haven't seen anybody do it yet, but I think it would be worse to just have people on for the sake of doing it. Like, I remember playing World of Warcraft. I remember there were always people that were like, why don't we have more openly gay characters? Why aren't there gay NPCs? And I'm like, well, does it really make sense for that to happen? You know, who's to say that Garrosh Hellscream isn't a leather daddy? And we just don't know it. Like, you know, maybe that's a closeted thing, but do we really need a flaming NPC? Do we really need the Zeppelin driver to be a drag queen? Does that make any sense? Or are we just doing that just to sort of appease people? Does it make any sense? And I feel it's kind of the same with female writers. I don't agree with people that want something just for the sake of wanting it, and it has to be done well, and it has to be done right, and I think that needs to happen. So that's my rant on that.
No, I mean, I think it's a good one. You know, I mean, gimmicks are gimmicks, mm-hmm. and when people smell a gimmick, you know, it's just, it turns them off. It makes it unappealing. It, mm-hmm. it amplifies what's negative about it, even if there are good things in it. It just makes the bad stand out so much more. But I also think it's really dangerous to continue to believe that there's this myth that, you know, that every content editor sits down and, you know, there's this cabal like moment where they're like, if I get a woman to do this, my God, I can just put it out there and people will just talk, you know, and it's, you know, and the thing is I, you know, it's really, really, really easy to think that, because those are the things that we encounter in our everyday experience. But mm-hmm. when you have professionals who are very serious about what they're doing, and I try to be a professional and I try to be serious, and I'm usually not 100% either, but I work on it. Mm-hmm. When I really look at the content coming in and the submissions, you know, I'm really trying to find what's really good. Is there something here? And that's why I'm not always the fastest at giving back feedback, as you're aware, but I try to make it really relevant and positive and be like, look, you know, you're willing to step forward. You've demonstrated the minimum barrier, which is I'm willing to do this. Mm-hmm. You know, the next step is, can you, are you willing to step up and work on it and evolve yourself and bring it forward and polish it and edit it and get into the process of writing, which really is work, you know, just like podcasting, there's a lot of work that goes into it, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that gets underappreciated. And so, you know, the idea that you can just, you know, pluck some random Joe, you know, or some random girl with a pretty face and slap her onto an article, you know, nobody would, you know, no editor in the right mind would want to do that. You know, that just doesn't make sense to deliver something that's poor or gimmicky or, you know, advertorial. You know, you really want to try to find somebody who's already stepping forward and wants to put in the work, because they can get to a point where they're going beyond what you expected, and they're continuing to evolve and grow. And it's, you know, that's a really awesome experience.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about what it takes to write for Gathering Magic. So you guys are, I mean, I don't know since I got turned down, but let's talk about other people now. So you guys seem to be always be looking for submissions. The door seems to be always wide open for that. Let's be honest. What are some of the more common mistakes that you see in submissions, or what are some things that you, or what are some trends that you see when people send you things? And what is some advice that you have for people to sort of, you know, encourage them to not make those mistakes or to get them through to the final cut?
Man, you've built this beautiful soapbox here.
Don't get me wrong.
I'm stepping up.
Well, don't get me wrong, and I certainly don't mean it in any bad way, but I definitely believe that if people don't know, they can't fix it. And I feel like, and that's not to say that you haven't been clear, because your submission site is very clear, but you know, I do feel like it is one of those things where if people knew about it, maybe they'd be less likely to make those mistakes. And if they don't know, you know, I feel like especially there's this problem where people feel like by not saying anything, they're being nice. And I'm not saying that you guys have done that at all, but you know, I can imagine, and I've heard from people that they either don't hear back from certain websites, or they've gotten very canned, you know, we're not looking right now. And that doesn't help anybody. So I really feel like by you going there, you could help people. And I think that would do some good. So that's kind of why I'm asking you. I'm not trying to be mean. But I'd love to hear it. I would love to know.
Yeah, you know, this is like such a big, it's like, it'd be like asking me what is casual magic, and what can people do to understand it better? You know, there are just so many angles and so many things to think about. But I think that, you know, I really kind of want to kind of run through two things. The first is, you know, kind of straightforward is these are the most like common things that I see in submissions that kind of make them difficult to kind of accept or work with. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to run down a list here, and it's not exclusive or all inclusive or, you know, however you want to state it. But the idea that this is a deck that I played at a PTQ and I did reasonably well, you know, that kind of average Joe playing an average deck and having an average day, you know, that for you, that was an extraordinary experience and that's great, but it takes like, you know, really just a high level writer to take what would be ordinarily a very ordinary day for lots of Magic players and create an extraordinary story from it. Mm-hmm. You know, the barrier to take your droll, dull, you know, 5-3 missed top 8, you know, in the last round and turn it into something awesome is really high. You know, I've never really seen that. That these are decks that I think are cool. You know, that these are cards that I think are cool. And it's not to say that those articles don't exist or aren't get published, because many of them pop up, especially on, you know, all the major sites. The Gathering Magic had several, you know, with Dragon's Maze recently. But, you know, usually that's the exception. You know, that's, you know, if you're submitting and sharing something, you know, what you say really isn't that different from what lots of other writers are saying. Mm-hmm. And they already have an established audience and a level of expectation, and they have a process maybe they went through or something that made, you know, again, a little gimmicky, is something that their approach unique, you know, yours isn't going to stand out or really add value to the discussion. Mm-hmm. You know, things like using a whole bunch of kind of like magic slang and jargon, you know, that colloquial understanding, not everybody necessarily has that. And not all of that, you know, the verbal familiarity that, you know, you'll have somebody at PTQ translates well into writing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's good to have a voice and it's good to say things the way you would say it, but that doesn't mean that you shortcut grammar and, you know, spelling things out. And if you call, you know, that we're going to have to change every single reference of a card if you call it by its nickname. And if we don't, somebody who has never seen that nickname or isn't as familiar, you know, is to be totally lost. You know, you alienate and narrow down your audience the more you use very specific targeted type of vocabulary.
Well, fine. There goes my article on Bad Liliana.
That if you're thinking about writing, you know, and this is kind of the second thing I want to talk about, is that there's this idea that, you know, and I think it comes from how players approach Magic, the idea of breaking through. Mm-hmm. That simply one day you'll be sitting and playing and suddenly you'll just play at a whole another level. You'll just step up and you're just like, suddenly you're just better at the game. And the thing is that suddenness, it looks like it happens, because if you look at, you know, get it, you know, making winning a PTQ versus just missing the top eight, mm-hmm. you know, you look at, you know, top eighting a Grand Prix versus not making top 64, you know, top eighting a Pro Tour, you know, that's a breakthrough at that level, you know,
yeah.
that there are these breakers, but really it comes down to just a long gradual process of development. And the best players in the game have been playing for a very long time. They play a lot. They work really hard at it. They make tons of mistakes. And you can see it on camera, and you can see it in their articles, and they talk about them very candidly, and they share them, because the whole goal is that they need to recognize what they're doing wrong and put in the practice to do it better next time.
Yeah.
And I think that allegory that people get about competitive Magic, because it's not a switch that just turns on, it's something that you work on over time. That same practice applies to everything. So, like, if you want to be a writer for, you know, a top Magic site or your favorite Magic site, if you aren't already writing, you need to start. Mm-hmm. Whether it's a blog, whether it's Tumblr, whether it's on forums, you know, in comments, you know, the goal isn't to write these litanies and these big long things, but it's just to be very thoughtful about what you're saying and why, and to do that as often as you can, because the more often you take the time to write and put your thoughts out there and compose what you want to share and engage in dialogue with people that are going to engage back and provide you different perspectives on that thought and why they thought that way, that's going to help you evolve your writing and help you take a step forward. And until you're at a point where you're really comfortable clearly and cleanly sharing your ideas, you're going to have a really difficult time having an article that clearly and cleanly shares your ideas that a site's going to want.
And I think that's part of the reason why my article didn't necessarily make the cut, which, again, I'm okay with, I swear. But when I wrote my blog, I was writing a blog for a little over 2 years, and my blog wasn't so much articles so much as a diary. I put a lot of myself into my blog. I came out on my blog. For me, it was more of a sounding post. I was telling a lot of personal stories from my gaming experience, and it was really hard for me to write a proper article. And then there is a difference between more journal-style writing and then more article-style writing. And I think that's where I stumbled, was I was trying to do something I don't normally do. And I think you might have seen glimmers of that in my post, was I'm used to writing very personal. This is how I feel. This is what I want to do. And having to frame it a certain way that I'm not used to was really where I stumbled. So and that just kind of reminded me that maybe I'm better off writing in my way. And I haven't written in a really long time, and I especially haven't written anything in my usual style. But I found success on my blog when I was writing in my format. People wanted to see me go through things. People wanted me to experience things, and that's sort of where they would come along for the ride. And I kind of enjoy that in other people's posts as well. But you know, I it just comes down to different styles and being compatible and things like that. So.
And that personal experience that you want to share, that's the really cool thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if I remember your feedback correctly, I was just kind of asking you to skip forward to that as quickly as possible.
Okay.
you know, it was more, you know, that thing that you're feeling, that experience that you're distilling and sharing, you know, that's a really cool thing. Mm-hmm. That's something that other people read and totally get into, and they totally see themselves in it. They personify in it. They relate to it. They know other people that have done that. You know, that whole engagement and that experience, that's what makes, you know, I think some, you know, kind of a journal style or experiential style, if you will, you know, that really appealing.
Mm-hmm. So the last thing I wanted to ask you about, actually, there's two things. I asked for suggestions from friends as to what I could talk to you about or what I could ask you about. And Chris Lansdell had suggested this question for you. He had mentioned that you are somebody who wears a lot of hats. You're a dad, you're a husband, you're a writer, you're an editor-in-chief, you're a content manager, you have a life, you do things for fun outside of Magic. How do you keep it all going? How do you keep all the plates spinning?
Plates break. Yeah, kind of the way I put it is, you know, it'd be a bold-faced lie if I just said everything goes perfectly fine and I'm way ahead on everything at all times and nothing ever goes wrong. You know, that's just foolish. You know, the thing that I've learned is that really, you know, I need to just continue to prioritize what really matters in the moment. And sometimes that means I just have to take time away, like, you know, I want to sit and write all day and work on the site and tweak these things and answer submissions, which is often, you know, takes the brunt of my, I really don't have time to put an hour into reading the submission and thinking about it and putting together, you know, constructive feedback that helps, you know, promote and grow that person as a writer. Mm-hmm. You know, I need to spend time with my wife, and I need to go away, or I need to go to dinner, or I just need to walk away and do something completely unrelated, you know, to this at the moment. You know, so things will fall through the cracks and break, and it doesn't always work out perfectly, you know, but at the end of the day, if I know I put forward my best effort and I've handled the things that are really critical and I continue to focus on delivering for other people, that if I've made my wife and you know, my kid and my family happy, that I've kept my boss at work and helped my team, you know, kind of continue to do what we're doing and deliver everything on time. And I've helped make sure that the things that other people are passionate about and want to share are getting shared on the site and are being projected and growing that, you know, delivering that to the community, giving it to them. You know, if I can get all of that done, that's kind of the goal for mm-hmm. me.
Has there ever been a time, Adam, where you've considered cutting back on some things, where it's all gotten to be a little much and you're just, you know, things are kind of hectic and things are really not going your way? And has there ever been a moment where you're like, something might have to go?
Yep. I was at Grand Prix Anaheim last year. It was about this, a little bit later. It was about May. It was definitely May last year. And I was trying to wear two hats at the same event. Mm-hmm. I went to kind of do some content for Gathering Magic, and I was, you know, trying to like write up these blog posts throughout the day and talk about like what was happening at the event and the kind of the unique and cool things that weren't necessarily visible on camera. Mm-hmm. And I was also there as a guest for Glenn Goddard and Sun Mesa events. They were putting on the Grand Prix. They wanted me to play Magic with, you know, with people, you know, all comers, you know, show off my cube, play Commander, just kind of play however as just kind of a personality. And you know, as you can imagine, suddenly there's just not enough time to do all of that in a day. And I'm, you know, I also have weekly deadlines. At the time, my deadline was on Tuesday. So on top of all of this, I'm thinking about, you know, finishing up and finishing writing and editing my submission for Daily MTG. And, you know, I just, you know, I realized that I was trying to do too much that weekend. Mm-hmm. And I was not as successful in any of them because I was stretching myself too thin. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are a lot of ways to approach problems like that. You know, if I'm stretching myself too thin, one way is to give things up. And that's a really, I think it's a common one where, I'm guilty of it. Like, you know, one of the things that I know that I don't do is, you know, physical activity. You know, I really need to like just go walking or do something, you know, not sit in front of a computer and type and code and write. But, you know, it's easy for me to cut that out and say, well, that's an hour and a half that I now have to make money, you know, mm-hmm. if you will, or to answer emails or to do something else that I think is more valuable at that moment with. But the other way is to get help, have the right support system in place where, you know, you can better handle more things. You know, and I think that it's a little subtle because it's not always obvious how you can have a better support system. And so what I needed for me is I needed, you know, more discipline in my habits, and I had to evolve and be better about writing more, better about editing in advance, better about following through on creating a vision and delivering my article, you know, seamlessly and making sure that I built in time for delays and revisions and, you know, distractions and urgent, you know, emergencies. But then the other thing is I needed more support on the site, and that's where I picked up, it's not like I drafted somebody, you know, not like a team, but, I found, Carlos Gutierrez. He's awesome. Somebody I worked with when I was at Quiet Speculation. He, you know, very interested in learning about editing, was willing to put in, you know, he didn't have all the time in the world, or kind of the, in a position to take on all the responsibility or anything like that. But having somebody there that could, instead of me focusing on having to write and code and QC and post the content, I could focus on creating, just writing it. And then he can, you know, effectively manage it as a producer and roll it out, you know. And so something like that, where I'm able to add in an element from the outside that helps balance it better, you know, that's what really it took for me to kind of change how I was going with that.
Mm-hmm. So if people wanted to find you, Adam Staborski, aside from the obvious, where can they find you? How can they get in touch with you?
I'm on Twitter, the_Stibs, STYBS. I don't accept random friend requests on Facebook. You can find me, I'm public, but generally I like to at least interact and know who I'm friends with.
And yet you found me on Facebook.
Well, we've interacted on Twitter, and I think you're awesome, so.
I'm kidding. It was just surprising because I took a nap, and I woke up from the nap and saw a friend request, and I'm like, Adam Staborski wants to be my friend. Yeah. Yeah. Very big moment for me.
And, of course, I'm all over Daily MTG on Thursdays. I'm writing Command Tower. I'm on Gathering Magic. I think that covers it.
Well, there is one more question I forgot to ask, and I should have slipped that in before your contact info. I did get a question submitted by a Mr. Michael Robles. Maybe you've heard of him. He's a random, nobody who just sort of trolls the webs a little bit. I felt kind of bad for the guy, so I figured I'd ask this question. Anyways, he wants to know why it's so awesome to have him on Gathering Magic.
Because he tells everyone he possibly can tell that he's on Gathering Magic.
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah.
I was talking about that. I just recorded my bottle show earlier today where I talk about all my previous guests a little bit and give some behind the scenes dirt. And the one time he was on my show just a couple weeks ago, between him and Tifa combined, because they support each other wholeheartedly, I really didn't have to do any promo that week. So I had Legit MTG doing their part to blast the show and get everybody to listen. And then between those two combining forces, I think I maybe did like one little tweet like, yeah, there's this show. It was almost like a grenade. Like I threw the grenade out, hid behind the sandbags, and just watched them do all of the exploding, and they did all the work, and I just sort of took cover and watched all the retweets come in and watched all the listens come in, and yeah, it was pretty nice. It was pretty nice to not have to do all that for once.
and I guess kind of like a, maybe that's like 90% of the reason, I like working with Mike, but maybe that other 10% is that, he's really passionate about what he does, and he's not afraid to broadcast that and own that these are the things that he cares about, and he wants you to know that and see it. So that might be important too, but not that much.
He probably blackmailed you a little bit, didn't he?
I mean, he
still has those photos of me. I mean, that's the only reason he was on my show is because he promised not to show those photos, but I'm kidding. Sure. Well, Adam, it has been a pleasure having you on. And as I've said before, I really do enjoy Gathering Magic. And I've already had, I think the last time I counted, I've had 5 of your people on my show. And I'm not even done yet. So I'm pretty sure I will have had most of your team on my show at some point. And I really do enjoy what you do. I read the site every morning, first thing in the morning when I get to work. I don't even do any work when I get to work. I read my rotation of magic sites. Once that's done, then I get to work. So I just want you to know that every morning I started off with Gathering Magic. So,
well, thank you.
Yeah. And to anybody listening, if you enjoyed me on the Deck Tees, you can, of course, find the show on legitmtg.com. You can also find the show on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Feel free to rate it and leave me a positive review. If you have any feedback for me, you can find me on Twitter at OriginalEstrus. That is OriginalEstrus. You can also email me at estrus@elitistrux.com. Thank you all so much for listening, and please take care of yourselves, okay? Bye. I'm gonna go home, but I'm still getting out of control.